He's going to speak for 40 minutes.
Go on, Craig.
Watch.
Thanks.
Good.
Bore da. My name's Craig, I'm Nadia.
Hey, Craig.
Nice to be back at Trafalgar. Like my little trip gets me down the West End. And me and my friend Mr. F up the back and a few others just been for our traditional once a year or once every 2 years Chinese, which was very nice, you know. And I'm just grateful that I can do things like that. You know what this program promised? Freedom from active addiction. And that's what I've got today, really. I'm from the South Wales Valleys.
That's my shirt.
And, you know, last Friday was the 50th anniversary of the Aberfan disaster. And I'll be honest with you, 16 years clean, it brought a lot of feelings up. My cousin, who I knew was going to be on the news and the TV and all that, he was the little blonde kid. I don't know if any, some of you will know it and some of you won't, but he was the little blonde kid that they seen his hair in the mud and they pulled him out. And I was watching it was last Friday night, and there was things coming out that I'd never heard about. My cousin was sharing about how there was this dead girl on his shoulder for 2 hours before they pulled him out. I'm a family member, I've never heard that before. And then they were talking to the old ladies, and you know, we were thinking therapeutic value of, you know, one person has lost a child helping another one, same as this program. But the old lady was going, no, I was too scared. You know, I knew I'd lost a child, but he was too scared to bring up any feelings in the other person. And it just made me think about, you know, where we are and what goes on here and how I'm able to kind of, you know, share what's going on for me. And that, you know, it was sad and it was tragic, and I've dealt with it in the steps, you know, and the higher power helped me out with it. But it just made me think about Narcotics Anonymous, and I started to get really grateful, you know, about, wow, I've got somewhere. And the shit do hit the fan for me, you know. As some of you know, I lost my mate last year. I lost my niece. And, you know, when it hits the fan, you know, I've got people that I can share it with. So I'm from Merthyr Tydfil. And I hated growing up there. I grew up in these mountains, and there was only old ladies behind curtains nosing, and I felt claustrophobic, and I couldn't wait to get the hell out of there, you know. And then, luckily enough, I found this scene called the Northern Soul scene. It was in magazines, and I just, as an addict, I was hooked. I seen it, and I wanted it. And you know, it freaks me out now being a father. I've got a 19-year-old and I've watched him grow up, and I think, Jesus, at 14 I was hitchhiking all over the country, you know. I'd go up to Wigan, over to Peterborough. I used to go to Purley on a bank holiday Monday. There was like a funk club down there. Jumping trains, you know, never paying for anything. And that's how I started taking drugs. You know, to be honest, it wasn't because I was feeling a bit, oh, I don't feel right as a kid. It wasn't like that for me. I didn't know how I felt. I was just, you know, going along with things, right? But what I needed the pills for, I needed to stay up all night. Because these clubs started at 2 o'clock in the morning and finished like 8 or 9, which sounds pretty normal now. But back in the 70s, the licensing laws and things were a lot different, you know. And you know, Sundays, people didn't want you dancing on Sundays. It was like a religious day and stuff. So, you know, if you didn't have a vicar after you, you got the drug squad after you. So that's how my using started, and I loved it, you know. And it was so different to Merthyr Tydfil. Merthyr Tydfil, it was all about drinking, you know, and fighting, and, you know, you kind of, you were feared up, and you had to be on your guard at all times. So we all know about using, and I didn't know anything until I got you, but once I started reading this book, you know, it soon became very clear to me that I was someone, I was an addict who substituted one for another, you know. And the pills that I used to take for the dancing soon kind of stopped working. Then I moved on to another drug, you know, smoking dope. That went on for years and years and years. And I went right through, you know, all the drugs, really. Some of you know, some of you have heard my share before. I've only got kind of one story. It's a big story, because I used for about 25 years. You know, I was duped into coming to Narcotics Anonymous, to be honest. And I remember it. It was a Monday. I was living in Latimer Road. It was in 1995. The only reason I know it was in 1995 was I found the where to find years later. And I'd just been waiting to score, you know, the usual. Ring him up at 11, he'll turn up by about 1:30. That kind of thing every day. And I got in and my missus said, she said, I rang a drug helpline up today. And I spoke with this guy on the phone. The guy on the phone said they have these meetings. And they have one in St. Charles's Hospital in Ladbroke Grove. And there's one on tonight, you should go. And I goes, you know what, love, it sounds great. And I will go, but I ain't going today. Back then I was in just for tomorrow mode, you know. And a week later, and it was the next Monday, I remember, it was the very next Monday, I'd just been waiting for the man, come back at the table, doing what I'm doing. She said, you know what, I rang the drug helpline up again today. Spoke to this guy on the phone. And they said they had these meetings, there's one tonight, and they have another one on Thursday night as well you could go to. And, you know, you should go. The man on the phone said they'd help you. I was just about to go into Just for Tomorrow. And she said, but the man on the phone said, if you don't go, they come round and get you. And I thought, I better go and check this out, because at that time, no one come round uninvited to my house. I lived on the ground floor and they had to have the secret knock on the back window. And if I was caught out, they would have to have something in their pocket before they kind of got over the doorstep. But, you know, it was curtains closed and I was in a mess. And I went there, you know, I thought, let me go and check these out. And I went there and it was the most scariest place I've ever been to in my whole life. And you know what, I'd been scoring in some kind of crazy, I'd been down the North Peckham, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning, back when the riots were on in the 80s, and I've been down the avenues in New York City with all the Latinos, you know. But the silence of newcomers time in that last 10 minutes, and I think maybe I was the only newcomer in there. I hadn't lived in silence. I hadn't been in silence for donkey's years. And I made the fatal mistake of telling this guy that I sold clothes down Portobello Road Market on a Saturday. And every Saturday, this guy would come down. How are you doing? When you come to the meeting? You know, I'm going to the convention. I was like, oh, what's going on here? I'm going to Los Angeles and all that, right? And then, you know, to get my missus off my back, I said, you know what? There's more drugs in that Narcotics Anonymous than it is in the crack house I go to in Notting Hill Gate. And she don't know any different. She don't know. She's like, okay, you know, we'll try the blending. Maybe that'll work. So I got her off my back. And, but this guy was a little bit more trickier, you know. So, you know, I had to get my missus on side first. And I say, it's a cult, you know what I mean? He's like the Scientologist or something. They're coming to get me, you know. And I would see him coming and I would hide behind the, like, leather coats. Like, oh, there is that crazy guy, you know. The truth of the story about that was, you know, I was maybe 2 or 3 years clean, and I seen that guy walk into the den meeting absolutely smashed to bits. I couldn't believe it. And I love that slogan, you know, always welcome the newcomer. One day they just might be your sponsor. And there it was, plain to see, you know. And I see this guy around, and he's a huge part of my story. He was the one, he, you know, he was the first kind of contact that I had, you know. And, you know, I'm forever indebted with him. So that wasn't my time. And then in 1997, I was in New York and I ended up in a detox. And, you know, a couple of guys come in, they're from Narcotics Anonymous, in the detox, I've been on them, you know, carrying the message. And basically they suggested that, you know, when we leave, and there was about 30 of us on this ward, when we leave, you know, go to a meeting and put your hand up and say, you know, I'm just out of the detox and I'm 2 days clean and something will happen for you. The detox was, it was a crazy detox. It was 30, I was the kind of only London kid there. You know, it was all kind of, they'd never been off the block, Puerto Ricans, with a couple of black guys from Brooklyn. They were like, where are you from, man? Puerto Rican guy, where are you from? London. They were like, oh, that's the capital of France. So it was weird. It was weird. And they were, and God bless them, they were beat as well, you know, kind of, HIV was rife and stuff, you know what I mean? I was like, although I was beat, I was a lightweight, really, compared to kind of, they were really kind of heavy street junkies, really. And, you know, we'd get a film in the night, and, you know, I love one of them blaxploitation films, right? Oh, great, you know. But after about the fifth night, the same kind of movies, I'm like, oh, God, I can't take another one of these, not Boys in the Hood 6. And the guy who ran the detox, who was looking after us, he obviously picked up on it, and he said, let the guy from London pick the movie tonight. He ain't picked a fucking flick since he's been here. Let him pick the movie. So this was in 97. They bring the list over, and they got to go out and get it, and I'm looking. What can I get? And then all of a sudden, this movie jumps out, and I thought, oh, I've heard about this. I've heard about this movie. I really want to see it. I love this one, Braveheart. They're like, oh, Braveheart. So they go and get the video comes back, they see the cover. They're like, this guy's a fucking fag. Well, he's got skirts on. Skirts on. So anyway, we put Braveheart on. And of course, you know, it's swashbuckling, isn't it? There's heads coming off, there's legs coming off. And they absolutely loved it. Do you know what I mean? I was kind of in, right in the middle. They were like, wow, is that posse still around? I said, they are actually, but most of them live in Glasgow these days, you know. Right? So it was hard, but it was fun. And I related, you know. And most importantly, I got out of that detox and I went to this meeting, which was even crazier than the detox. It was a meeting called St. Mark's's. And it was like a workshop meeting. So as soon as this, it started at 10 in the morning, as soon as this one would shut, 30 minutes later, there's another one upstairs, you know. And, you know, I walked in, like, oh, it's as big as this meeting. Oh, God. And I took on the suggestion, my name's Craig, I've just got out of the detox and I'm like 2 days clean and bang. I was out to coffee before I knew it, you know. These people took me out and, a bit like Tasha said, Tasha's story is very similar to mine, you know. So I'm in Narcotics Anonymous, 3 Budweisers before we get there. Yeah, lovely. Got the white tea ring. You know what I mean? 5 days clean. Lovely. And I'm going to have 3 on the way home as well, like this, you know. And when I realised that kind of not working, I've been with the other mob as well, you know. 0.5 gram of Henry, you know what I mean? Ah, lovely, alcoholic, 2 days sober, lovely, great, great program this, you know. So I've tried every way but loose, as they say, you know. I couldn't work out total abstinence. Murphy Tidville is like, drinking was ingrained in the culture, you know. I always say, a great night out in Merthyr Tydfil, a fight, a fuck, and fish and chips. Maybe not in that order, but, you know, that's where I come from, right? And that's been going on for a couple of thousand years before the Romans even arrived down the Thames. So, you know, yeah, I can see the powders are a problem, but drinking... So I had to learn that, you know. And you guys and girls said to me, well, you know, it's like a gateway, you know, it will get you back. And sure enough, it got me back really quick, you know. I skipped back to London, and then, you know, I remember I got back to London on the Wednesday. Lady Diana got killed on that Saturday in 97, end of August. And I just went down into the sewers of addiction. That was far, far, far beyond my wildest dreams, you know. The addiction then really started robbing me. You know, me and the missus had split up, she got the boy. Thank God, you know. I got no friends, right? Apart from these kind of using friends, which, you know, I loved, right? But I had no kind of friends from the past. I'd lost everything. And then the addiction wants to rob even more. That's not enough for addiction. It's not enough for this disease. Then he wants to rob me of my inside morals and things. Start begging on the street. Start swooping for cigarette butts. All the stuff that I wasn't brought up to kind of do, you know. Using dirty needles, you know. Stealing, you know, never sat right with me stealing. And, you know, the big night for me was the Millennium Night, 2000. That was the night I gave up. That was the night I surrendered. I didn't know I surrendered. I only found out that when you guys started sharing, you know, not the rock bottom surrender, I mean the big inside surrender. That was the night it was like, oh, I can't do this. And then from that night, it was really difficult to get clean. I knew I wanted to go to Narcotics Anonymous. I had some sick thinking of saying, do you know what, I'm not going back there until I got a day clean. You know, I don't recommend that, but that's where my sick thinking was at that time. And I eventually got into another detox in the September of 2000. And Sunday morning, you know, two guys come in. We're from Narcotics. I was like, I know where you're from, man. I've been waiting for you since Wednesday. Give us the way to find. I'm out here next week, you know. And I was ready, and I was beat, and I was willing, and I dived in. And what Tash was saying again about the meetings, I wanted to go to rehab. I was the only one that wanted to go to rehab, and I was the only one they wouldn't send. They were like, no, we think you can have a little day program over in Fulham. So they sent me to this day program. It was 12-step. Oh, God, I was really lucky as well. I walked in on the first day, and it's one of our members was running it. And he said something that was brilliant to me that I'll never forget. I walked in there and he turned around to me and he said, Craig, they say one in a thousand can drink again, son. And I don't think it's you. And I just knew he was talking the right language. I thought, he's so right, you know. He said one other thing funny a couple of weeks later. He goes, yeah, Northern Soul, behind a painted smile. You know, we were getting into masks and things by that time. That made me laugh. But we, on a Monday, we'd come in and we'd go around the room and they'd go, how many meetings did you go to? And someone would say, oh, yeah, I'd done the three, you know, it was three required. How many meetings? Oh, do you know what? I had a kid I couldn't get. How many do you do? No, I didn't do any. How many do you do? 11, you know. So I'd done the program and I just dived in here. And I had nothing better to do, really. My missus was angry. You know, my son was kind of, you know, getting bigger, needed a father. I got out of that detox and I walked into a meeting, Denby Roads. If anyone knows Denby Roads, a big arch. And it was a bit like, I know a lot of you are young here, but some of you will remember play school. It was like through the arch window where you can kind of, I knew that once I'd walked through this arch, I got a good chance that I could kind of, you know, find something at the end of the rainbow, really. And I walked through there and I met some people, welcomed me, gave me hugs. And there was three of us from this treatment center. One Welsh boy, who I didn't know him from Wales or anything, but we went through detox and we were going through this day program. And I was thinking about this week. It was my birthday last month, and I was thinking about the characters I meet in Narcotics Anonymous. And we got there, and at the end of the meeting, this guy, American guy, Michael, God bless, God rest his soul. He came up to the three of us, you know, we're standing there like lemons at the end of the meeting, everyone knows each other, and we're like, you know what it's like. And he said, he goes, wouldn't you like to come and read step one with us? So I could have, you know, like, looked at each other. And I turned round to the two guys and I went, we need all the help we can get. This guy is offering up. I think we should do it, right? So he takes us to Starbucks, this guy, right? He's going through his bag. I had to buy the coffee. I mean, he got about 3 pence on me. I buy him the coffee and all that, right? He's pulling a book out. Oh, we're going to read step one now. And he turns around, he goes, tonight I think we're going to read it in Swedish. I thought, wait a minute, I might be from Merthyr Tydfil, right? But I can fucking spot a natter, will I see one? So I was pretty assertive. I went, you know what? I just remember I got a bit of step work I got to do at the top of the program tomorrow. Step one, part one. Boom. And as I was going through the door, the two guys were left there. You know, they couldn't assert themselves. So that was quite funny, you know. He used to ride a tandem as well to the meetings. And now I'm about 30 days clean and I'm walking home from the den and he pulls up on his tandem. You know, talk about self-obsession, right? You know, at 30 days. He goes, can I give you a lift home? No way! I wouldn't be seen dead on the back of that thing. Do you know what I mean? But God rest his soul, you know, he died, he got knocked off his bike, which is quite sad, and he got killed maybe about, I don't know, 7 years ago. But he did some big stuff, you know. He started the crash meetings. He was the first guy to kind of bring that in, you know. And he used to have another mate as well. There was a Canadian guy with a big beard, Richie, that was around. Richie would come over from Canada and live in their service office over in Ebury Street, you know. He'd be doing phone service and Richie's wife runs a kind of drying on the radiator, you know. He's living there. And he's one of them guys that, you know, I'm looking for an addict to read step one. Well, after that first night, so I was like, wait a minute, you know. I was also lucky enough that there was this circuit speaker who I absolutely love and I'm forever indebted to him. When I was like about 20, 30 days clean, he was around the meetings in West London, right? And he would share, sometimes he'd be doing the chair, but sharing from the floor, you know. And he came up to me and he turned around to me. It was a bit like what the guy said to me in the program about the drinking. He said to me, he goes, don't go getting too well on us, Taffy. He goes, because we keep burying the well ones in this program. And that really resonated with me, you know. There was a lot of God stuff going on when I come in, you know. Walking on air, to be honest, some of that. And you know, I did see people acting like they were kind of, you know, some sort of preacher. And when he said that to me, I thought, I kind of understand that. And he was bang on, to be honest. I don't see any of them around no more, you know. And it's funny, I hadn't seen him for a long time, and I made 10 years. And I picked my keyring up, and a week later, he walked into the newcomers meeting in Portobello Road. I was like, oh, God, look who's there. My heart was fluttering. I went back to, like, 30 days clean. I goes, oh, I got to tell him I've made 10 years. You know, I'm chuffed, right? It's a decade. I felt really proud of myself. It's a big thing, right? My missus and my son are really happy. I got to tell him. So I went up to him. I said, I made 10 years last week. He went, nice one, Taffy. Nice to get the easy ones out the way. Same again. That resonated. I had another friend who was like, cheeky, blah. I was like, no. I think he's bang on. I tell you, 2 weeks later, boom. Down I went. Spiraled out of control like a spitfire. And I landed in this kind of treacle right? And I sledged through the next 4.5 years on the phone, sponsored, you know, where one of the most difficult periods I've had, you know. And, you know, when I was in that period, I questioned it. Do I want to come here? I don't even like these people. Dead, all that. But I have to kind of remember that principle of perseverance, you know, in step 10. Keep on keeping on. It's funny, when the steps started to happen, and they didn't happen straight away, I was about a year clean, and I got a sponsor, and I started going through the steps. I took to the steps like a duck to water, because it was like Northern Soul. I knew all this speak. Wow, I've been dancing to these records for years. You know, I danced to records called I Surrender, Hand It Over. Step three, Hand It Over. I Want to Testify. So it comes from the same place, so I loved it, you know. The higher power thing, I didn't have a problem with it, fake it to make it. I was never brought up religious, I've never talked about too much, you know. And, you know, today, I have a pretty strong faith, to be honest. And the circuit speaker used to come out with them cliches, and I love him, faith. For all insecurities, trust him. It's like, oh, that's the one, you know. I always like the other one as well. Nuts, not using the steps. They resonated with me, you know. I was beat. I didn't know anything. I had lots of stuff going around in my head, you know. But the higher power, you know, I thought back to my, I had to go back to my village and, you know, there was two kinds of people in my village. There was my old man and all the other old men that was down the pub drinking, right? With the BSE, as I call it, blame someone else. Yeah, them over there, right? Or every now and again, usually 2 weeks before the Christmas party or 2 weeks before the outing on the summer seaside outing, I'd go to chapel with the old ladies. And these old ladies were from like a different century. And they were gentle and patient, and they would read us these kind of Christian Bible books. And when I was working out, you know, how do I understand it? I kind of thought, oh, well, I know which kind of side of the fence I want to be, you know. And even to this day, you know, my church is Narcotics Anonymous. That's where I come, and that's where I put my money in the pot. And this is where I say my prayers, you know. But it works. It's worked for me. And I kind of, the God thing, I wear it very loosely, to be honest, you know. But through tough times, you know, I found out that my faith has got really strong compared to what it was. I had no faith. It was always, you know, fear. Just to go back to the Aberfan disaster, that was the number one resentment on the step four. And it wasn't even my resentment. It was 50 years ago, I'm 52, right? And, but it was the whole community. My old man was really pissed with it, because there was some stuff that was, you know, there was some stuff that was not right. And I went on my first holiday in recovery with my missus and my son. I took him to Spain, and we were in Spain, and something happened with this apartment we were staying in. And I was like, come on, we're out of here, let's go and find somewhere else. And I moved apartments, and we ended up in this town. And as I'm going into the lift to go up a few floors, there's these two old ladies, expats, and they were making a fuss of my son, talking to my missus, right? And then this woman turns around and says, I'm from Aberfan. I was like, wow. She goes, how long are you here for? I said, oh, we're here for another 10 days or something. She said, I'll bring you something down in a minute. 20 minutes later, she brings this book down about the Abervan disaster. First thing I do, I open it like I do with every book. I open it up, have a look at the pictures. There were some guys from my village that I knew that was digging the kids out. I was like, whoa. So I read this book, and I, for 3 days, I was like, I didn't expect this on audio. Sobbing. It means such a lot. But what it done was, and it was very kind of, you know, orderly, what happened. The kids went into the school at 9 o'clock and the register went. At 9:15, the mountain hit, you know. By 20 to 10, the first fire engine was on the scene. By 1 o'clock, the Women's Institute had turned up and they're putting trestles up. And where I kind of grew up on all this resentment of blame, 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 in this book was a lot of giving and coming together, and the whole world come together for Abervan. It was the first ever televised disaster in Britain's history. And the toys that were sent and the money that was sent and the people that helped. And once I read it, it just gave me a different perspective on the whole thing. Yes, it was tragic what happened, you know, but once I kind of seen it for what happened, and you know what, it was what it was, I was able to let go of it, and I was able to forgive. And it was a huge thing. And when I was watching the documentaries last Friday night, I could see there's people that still haven't forgiven. And it's not a nice place to be. But what came out of it was, I knew, I felt straight away, do you know what? There was no way that that was a coincidence. That was higher power at its finest in my working in my life. And I seen it and I recognised it. I was like, whoa. But what that does to me then, that gives me a much more, even stronger belief in this programme, you know. And this programme, like I said, I've been to meetings, you know, from detoxes at both sides of the Atlantic. And when I walked in, I was welcomed. There was literature that I was given, a cup of tea, you know, chairs were out, and things were going on. And that New Year's Eve night, the night I surrendered, was like, you know what? And I don't know whether I did say it to an higher power, but I didn't realize I was saying it to an higher power at that time. It was like, you know what? Get me out of this, and I'll do anything. And for me, the anything is carrying the tradition on of what we do in here. And that's why I keep coming back, you know. And at the years I got, I've seen a lot of people come through the rooms now, you know. And I gotta come here. I wanna come here, you know. I've got a healthy fear of like, you know what? You knock that on the head and stop doing that, I just might get that desire to use back. And I've built up a really nice life now. And there's some other things. I often share this as well. When I first came around, my missus was angry. And I used to have my son, rightly so, on a Saturday, once a week. You know, it's your turn. Have him. And of course, I got to get to meeting. I need a meeting on a Saturday. Right? I need it. So I would take him down the meeting. And fair play to the women, right, of the fellowship in West London, they would like, they knew what was going on for me. They said, look, we'll look after him a minute while I can kind of spew out all this kind of bile that was coming out, to be honest. You know, resentments, pop songs, it was all going on in there, you know, right? It was all mixed up. And he come for a while, and I remember, I don't know, I was about 3 years clean or something. My boy was about 8. And I come home one day and he pulled 2 chairs up in the front room. He said, let's have a meeting. Oh, God. You know, he because my name's Ike and I'm an addict. Oh, God, man. I thought, you know, I couldn't go back, you know. I've travelled quite a lot, which is lovely. I've been away quite a bit this year, you know. And I was stuck in a doorway for a long time in Notting Hill Gate, you know. Them last 3 or 4 years, I was stuck in the Abbey National doorway begging, you know. And I just have that freedom now. Remember when my son was really small? I remember we went to Brighton and, oh God, what a mission that was. You know, I had to make sure that I kind of had everything to go. And then I'm like oozing on the train, get off the train, straight in a pub, bosh. We hadn't even got to the seafront. I'm like, I gotta get back to Ladbroke Grove, man, parcel's going down. You know, no peace of mind, no freedom. And I have all that today, and it's wonderful. And my family love it as well, you know. I often share this as well, my missus, you know. We all work, and we get home, and the meetings are always 7, 7:30, which is when Emmerdale Farm and all that shit is on, right? Gets me out, yeah, go on, you go out for an hour and do your thing with your addict things, you know. And she does a bit of that. Because if I'm there, I'm just like, you know, sometimes the addict head would be like, oh God, that Gail Tillersley. I remember her coming in bloody 1972 and spoiling, you know. So it works. And I've never hidden anything from my boy, you know. I've always been there on an emotional level. I feel so grateful for that, you know. He can talk to me. You know, and he's not scared to kind of come and say, do you know what? He did this week, something was going on in work. Big resentment. I was like, I think we may have to just go through a quick little column on the step, you right? You know, let's have a look at your part in it. And that's the way I live my life. And I wouldn't have it any other way, to be honest. And my boy, fair play to him, takes it on board. Do you know what I mean? And the NA way is the way to go, really, for me. I'm an happy customer. I love my life. And God, I'm choked, really. I can't believe I'm clean, you know, because I see, you know, I lost my niece last year, she was 18, just starting out. Bought some of them illegal eye drugs off the internet, bang, you know. And I've seen many people, you know, die in the program, and it's serious. It is serious, and I can't believe my luck. I can't do it without you. I love coming here. I'm listening to someone like Tasha, you know. My Friday night is kind of one of the best Friday nights I've had in the West End for a long time. So I leave it there. Thank you.